What I explained earlier over the phone is as is, but I wanted to highlight again. Today, the pervasive question and the pervasive problem and the pervasive emotional disturbance that I always get approached about and that I always get asked about and always questioned about is depression, disappointment, disillusionment, and for some people as they get older, bitterness. So I wanted to talk about that. How do we solve that? You know, people who get disillusioned, they give up, they go away, they don't do. You know, how do you solve that? You can't blame the person, because if you're going to blame the person, you're going to have to blame everybody, because at one time or another in our lives, everybody gets on the nerves. I mean, you think about it. Even our precious mother and our precious father can get on our nerves, right? And most of the times they don't, because we really love our parents, most of us. And there are other people, even our wives and husbands, they can really get on our nerves. But if we think about it, that everybody has gotten on our nerves and has irritated us at one time or another, that's a clear indication that the problem lies with us and not with the other. You see, in Buddhism, there are holy beings, there are angels, there are saints, there are patron saints. There are very enlightened beings that can help us, that can bless us. There are. But you see, just saying I accept those holy beings, just saying I trust and I believe, and then we jump kick over and say I'm saved, it really doesn't make sense. As we can see, religion is growing in the world. Religion is growing in the world, I mean, at least in numbers. But peace is not. Peace is not growing in the world. So if religion is growing in the world and peace is not growing in the world, there's something missing. So therefore, religions, and that includes some forms of Buddhism also, all religions, because religions are not spoken by Buddha or God. They're spoken by men, like me, like you, who have imperfections. So therefore, when people tell you to accept, and once you accept a doctrine or a God or a deity or a Buddha or whatever, and you're saved, fine. Then everybody sits there and says, well, let me wait to be saved. So while we're waiting to be saved, you know, our wife gets on our nerves. Our kids get on our nerves. We look at our kids. We wish we didn't have them. The kids look at us and wish they didn't have us. And we look at our husbands and our wives and, you know, everybody looks at each other and go, what am I doing with myself? Why am I here? So while we're waiting for this jump start over, there's a whole corpus of things that we need to do that's missing in spiritual practice. And that is a systematic, slow explanation of why we get angry, what happens when we get angry, why we are disillusioned, why we get distraught, why we get bitter, why we get depressed, and we believe in Buddha, we believe in God, we've accepted. But why do these things still happen? Then we got to, you know, keep our eyes closed to disasters in the world, kids being killed, tsunamis and all that, and all these whys just go on and on and on and on. Well, Buddhism doesn't deal with all those whys, because all those whys are answered by your own why. And that starts with one's anger, disillusionment, depression, unhappiness, etc., etc. Some people are so depressed. Recently, you know, I was emailed that they're on heavy medication. Recently. Not email, SMS. Just two, three days ago, I got it from Europe. Some people are, and it was incredible because they got Tsongkhapa. They got a Tsongkhapa box. And it was so timely because they confessed that they are extremely depressed and they've been in severe depression for years. And they have a house, they have a kid, they have, you know, a good job, they have everything, but they're severely depressed and they don't know why. Now let me explain a little bit. When we are raised in a certain manner and we are used to a certain environment and we are used to a certain type of thinking, acting, moving, when we're used to that, when we come across situations and people that don't match that, then the projections appear. What is a projection? Projection comes in a word that something is projected on a screen. That something projected on a screen looks real, gives you emotions, has sound, moves, has a story, has a plot, has a beginning, middle, end, but there's nothing there. It's illusory. So like that, projections in Buddhism, because I realize some of these words are a little difficult for people because their English words are not really Buddhistic terms, so I'm going to have to make it Buddhist. So a projection is we want people to think, act, talk, move, function the way we are used to it. We want people to act the way we want them to be act. And when we want them to act the way we want, like when I was a kid, I was like that with my parents. Why aren't my kids like that with me? Then conflict, parents and kids come. Okay, when I was growing up, I saw my neighbors have a wonderful relationship. How come I can't have a wonderful relationship? Why is it that I go from one relationship to another relationship and another relationship and another, and it just drags me down, it takes me away, and it leaves me with nothing, and it keeps me completely away from who I am or what I'm supposed to do? And so what happens is projections happen, projections appear. You know why? There's a conflict of how to do things, conflict of view. So someone from America can come here and I've heard it. Someone from here can go to America and have all these views, you know, like that's not good, this is good, that's good, this is good, it's not good. But you see, what's good and not good comes from your own upbringing, your own environment, and in everybody's case, one's karma. Okay, so when we want people to be this way and this way and this way and that way and this way and that way, projections arise. When projections arise, if we're powerful, or we're convincing, or we're beautiful, or we're rich, or we have a poor me look, you know, whatever it takes to make the other person do what we want, we can convince a few people around us to do what we want. And so then we hide ourselves in that environment. Oh, I'm happy at home. I'm happy to be with my kids. I'm happy to be with my friend. I'm happy to be with my partner. I'm not happy to be anywhere else. It's not that you're not happy to be anywhere else. You can't get other people to do what you want. Because you can't get other people to do what you want, you're unhappy everywhere you go. And everywhere you go, criticism arises. Anger arises. And when criticism and anger arises more and more and more, you know what happens? Please listen carefully. The critical mind and the angry mind states. And then it builds. And it takes a foothold. And then when it takes a foothold, that's how you act all the time. You see, it doesn't come overnight. It doesn't come in one instant. It comes over a period. It creeps up on you. I mean, if you think about it, were you always angersome when you were younger? No, you were a happy-go-lucky little kid. Most of you were cute. Most of you. Happy and go-lucky. I was a very cute kid, really. I'm going to blog my kid pictures from when I was like that up to this age because I've had Wendy compile my pictures and I'll put it on very soon. So you see a pictorial me from this age to this age to this age. I haven't gone this age yet. And then it's pictures of me like that. Then like, I was very cute. And it was like, I looked at my picture and I said, wow, you're cute. He's a cute little kid, and I was told by my caretakers that I was a friendly, happy little child that smiled a lot, that joked a lot, that played a lot, always making jokes, always playing, very alive. And wherever I went, people always said, what a cute little boy. A lot of adoption offers, quite a lot. And then you'll see pictures of me going like that, and then, you know, like then like that, and then like that. And then you'll see pictures of me in between go like that, and then like that, and like that, and then now like that. Malam called up the monastery, Ganden, and was talking to one of his monk friends. And then one of the monk friends, who speaks a little bit English, was watching my teachings today on YouTube. And you know what he told Malam? Out of everything? He says, wow, Rinpoche teaches really well. And Rinpoche sure is big now. And he said, in Tibetan, you have two ways of saying fat. You can say gyakpa, you know, sokpo is sokpo is body. Gu is enlightened body. Gu is like Dalai Lama's body, Buddha's body, you say gu. Or normal person used to say sopu. All right? But we have honorific. We have two words for everything. It's called shese or honorific. So he was very, very, very respectful of me. He said, oh, Rinpoche's gu sha. Gu is body, his holy body, and sha is meat. His holy meat is very big. I mean, when you translate it, it's translated as holy meat. But that's not what it sounds like in Tibetan, okay? So I don't think that like I'm at a meat market. But that's what he told them. I was like... But in Tibetan, it's a compliment. Oh, yes, because they want their llamas fat and big and grand. That's the way they like it. You know what it means? When a llama is big and fat and grand, contrary to Hinayana thinking, it's not good or bad. The llama is always at home meditating, always at home contemplating, always at home studying, always at home working. That's why he grows fat. He doesn't run around. That's the Tibetan mentality of a fat llama. Llamas who are thin and fit, they go, not studying and meditating much, huh? Running around a lot, losing weight. Really, they think like that. You think, here cannot be. Here they say, you're fat, you're sloth, you're lazy, you're a glutton. You hang out at buffets before they open to get the front seat. You know, they say that about you. But Tibetan is very different. When Tibetan says the word, oh, you're very fat, is a compliment. Is a very big. Like Panchen Rinpoche, remember him? He's about 6'1". He's very fat. Fatter than me, he told me. He's met His Holiness Panchen Rinpoche. He says very, very fat. But people say, wow, he looks so good. He's so fat. And the word is very good. All right? So I just want to let you know, your upbringing and your projection of fat is third class. My culture says it's very good. So who's right and wrong? On that note, I'm going to catwalk a little because my butt's turning numb from sitting down. No, just kidding. Now, so that's our projection. Our projection is, well, when you think this way and that way, and then you get stuck on that thought, then you get stuck on being angry. You get stuck on the poor me mode. You get stuck on expectations. They should perform this way. They should talk this way. They should act this way. They should be this way. And when they're not, you know what happens? It's okay for 1 year and 2 year and 3 year and 4 year. After about 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years, you can't take it. You become impatient. You become impatient. You go, no, I'm not going to talk to them. I'm not going to hang out with them. I'm not going to socialize with them. I'm not going out. And you know what? You don't even go to parties anymore. You don't even show up. And even when you meet people, you're just rude outright. Why? Not because you're an evil person, but because you've already molded yourself according to your expectation of how people should be. You have individualized their behavior according to them. When you individualize a person's behavior according to just that person, you know what happens? For those who are prone to depression, they get more depressed. Like, I don't want a relationship. It's going to end up like that. I don't want a friend. They're going to cheat me. I don't want to go to that Dharma center. Definitely, it's going to be like that, like that, like that. I don't want to go to my family gathering anymore. You know, my aunties and all that, they're going to ask me if I'm married. You know, then for every person, whatever you have a hang-up on, that hang-up becomes stronger. Okay, so if you're afraid of looking bad, you'll be worried. If you're an angry person, you become more angry. If you're naturally a person that is an achiever, you'll become bitter. You know why? Because if you're an achiever, a lot of people can't do what you can do. You become anti-social. And then for some people, it's depression. You go into very deep depression. You avoid. Oh, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be involved in this. I don't want to go here. I don't want to meet them. I don't want to start this. I don't want to even try this. Because I was hurt. Because I was disappointed. Because my husband died. My wife died. My kid ran away. My auntie was a monster. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. And then it builds. You know what happens when it builds? You individualize it. When you individualize that problem, that's where your problem lies. That's what Buddha tells us. So you see, whether you believe in Buddha or God or not is not a real issue because God and Buddha can't take that away from you. Knowledge can. And that's what Buddha's teaching is about, is to give you knowledge. So when you listen to knowledge, whether you're a Buddhist or not, everybody wants happiness. So if you listen to Buddha's teachings and apply, you can gain happiness whether you're a Buddhist or not. Because Buddha never made it a criteria. If you're not Buddhist, you can't listen to my teachings and I don't want you to be happy. No metta to you. I don't think so. Buddha's not like that. You see, if I'm a Buddhist and I own a shop lot and you're not a Buddhist and you rent it, Buddha's not going to punish me. Buddha's not going to punish me to rent it to you because you're not a Buddhist. You know what Buddha's going to say? Does that shop lot benefit the person? In fact, give it to them for free. That's what Buddha would say. Of course, I'll tell Buddha, but you know, I got bills to pay lot. Bring my coke out. Yeah, that's what I would say. But of course, the Buddha says, no lah, don't be so greedy. I'll say, okay, free lah. Seriously. Buddha wouldn't say to me, oh, they're not Buddhist. And I'm doing a product placement. Coke called me up. Michael did Pepsi for $1 million. I'll do it for $500,000. No, I didn't get enough sleep last night. I only about 3-4 hours. I need to take a little sugar rush. Otherwise, I'll start looking lazy and sleepy and not good. Give a good Dharma talk, and all your projections will be like, oh, that was a tired talk. Your projection, of course. Now, so you become, hi Martin. You become more depressed, more angry, more disappointed, more disillusioned, more antisocial. Do you know why? Because you have individualized the problem. Does that mean that what you perceive and what you see is not there, that that person isn't like that? No, they are like that. They are like that. They are lazy. They are sneaky. They didn't do their job well. They do make excuses. They did lie. They did trick you. They didn't go all the way. You did see that. But you see, seeing that and how you react is the key. Seeing that and how you react is key. Why? Then Dharma teachers, gurus, can never scold their students, can never criticize their students, because all they see is everybody's wonderful and fabulous. Honey, I'm going to have to take a big shawl and wrap it around my head and not hear or see anything to believe that one. I'll let some of you let that sink in because you don't get it, but never mind. Then Dharma teachers can never criticize or encourage or say anything. If Dharma teachers cannot perceive, understand the level of a student, therefore cannot tell them like that, like that, like that, like that, how does a student become enlightened? How? Your perception is if a teacher scolds you, he shouldn't be like that. He should be calm and nice. Excuse me, that's your perception. But your perception is not necessarily appropriate and applicable to everybody. Okay? So therefore, what happens is when you don't individualize something, you go back and think and you meditate on this point. And I'm serious. You go back and think and meditate on this point. If you meditate on it, you will feel more release as the days go by. Do you know why? Because I have gotten so many disappointments in my life since I was, you know, a kid. So many. People ask me, Rinpoche, why do you still work for others? Why do you not get angry? Why do you not get people back? Why are you not ugly and vengeful? Why? Oh, it must be because you're a Rinpoche, you're high incarnation. I said, no, that's not why. It's not why. It's because I thought and contemplate and meditated on what I'm sharing with you right now. Because I was very upset in the monastery when I was a secretary there. I wanted to bring a teacher from North India to teach English. That was about 10 years back, okay? 12 years back. I was hired as in charge of the school in Gandhinshatse Monastery. And you know what I wanted to do? I had this kind of forevision that I want to bring Buddhism to the world. And the only way to do that is by Dharma teachers who, along with their studies, can speak English. Chinese. But I don't speak Chinese. So I said that I want to bring Tibetan laymen, not women, without families that are single from North India, to the monastery. And the monastery should keep a room for them and give them a salary and find sponsors to teach English to the monks. You know why? Because by the time they become a geshe, they speak English, they can spread Dharma to the world. Do you know the old monks? The abbot didn't say much at that time. The old monks, the other monks, the monks that's never been out of the monastery in their whole life, they were sitting there. They're very nice. They said, no, we can't bring English here. English will be the medium for the monks to go down. I said, what? They said, yeah. They said, because they'll travel out, they'll start talking, they'll meet people, they'll meet ladies, and they can disrobe. And I'm like, but they would disrobe anyway, some of them. I said, you're stopping knowledge. I said, we should bring them down and teach. And then I got a little frustrated, and I respectfully told all the monks, there's a meeting of 30 of us, 40 of us. I said to them, look, I'll go to Dharamsala, find the laypersons. I'll make sure they don't have families because we don't want them with wives and kids living in the monastery. It doesn't look good. I understand. That's why I say lay Tibetan men. So they said no. It would open the doors for black knowledge to come in. It would open the doors for people to travel abroad and not come back. And on, they had all kinds of protective issues. And I understood where they're coming from. Because when a monk is young, until they reach a certain age or a certain meditation, they're not stable. They can disrobe. When they're in an environment that's nurturing, they usually don't. So once they reach a certain age, they're quite okay. They can go any place, hang out with anyone, freaks, whatever, they will never disrobe. Because their monkhood comes from within, not from the monastery anymore. So that's what the monastery was afraid of. And I'm like, oh my God. And they had me writing 300 letters a month to the sponsors and to different people who donated and helped. I've got this bump on my finger. I'm not kidding. Look. See that bump? That's from writing. I mean, there's no computers, no typewriter, nothing. Even the typewriter we had doesn't work. Even when it worked, there was no ribbon. Even when there's ribbon, I had to go to the village to find the ribbon. It doesn't work, and it dried up by the time we came back. There's no way to win. All right, and then when the ribbon worked, the typewriter worked, when I made a mistake, there's no whiteout. I'm like, oh, no. So I did everything by hand. I wrote 300, sometimes 400 letters per month, every month, and that went on for years. And the letters weren't short little letters. Some letters were 12 pages because I need to explain what's happening to this department or that department. And I'm like, you know, they said, oh, your English is so good. We're so lucky to have you, and we're so happy you're helping, blah, blah, blah. I said, yeah, but we can get other people even better than me. We got to train them up. They didn't want it. So I quit. I put in my resignation, and I said, well, I'm not going to write 300 letters, do my studies, go to Malaysia to teach, and teach English to the monastery. I've got to do... It can't fit in my schedule. I said, I'd love to, but it doesn't fit in my schedule. So I had to resign from the school, giving teachings and giving talks and all that. And I just stuck to writing letters, stuck to my studies, stuck to serving my teacher. And then I got sent to Malaysia, of course, stationed here. Yeah, I was. I was literally sent to Malaysia. I wasn't sent away because I was making a ruckus there. Yeah, I was sent there. And then when I came to Malaysia, I went, okay, I'll go back and teach in the school. Too late. It was too late. My point, I understand what the monks are saying now, but I didn't fully accept it that time. I did not. That's my view. Okay, that's my view. Now, if all of you are going to stick to how you think things should be, I promise you, it never, ever gets better. It gets worse with time. Do you know why it gets worse with time? Because anger only grows. Depression increases. Bitterness becomes more. Do you know why bitterness becomes more? Let me explain why. Bitterness becomes more because whatever is making you bitter, the cause is not removed. So whatever you see will add to the bitterness. And it becomes more. So therefore, the monks and their view, in my opinion, could be different. I dare not say it wrong. Could be different. But if I'm going to harp on that and not help them and not respect them and not listen to them, that's my problem. So, same thing with all of us. Do you want your depressions to go away? Do you want your bitterness to go away? Do you want your antisocial kind of thinking to go away? Do you want your own kind of anger to go away? The only way it can go away is not a god or a Buddha. Really, they can't make it ever go away. You have to make it go away by applying these teachings. And how do you apply these teachings? That people and how they think is not an individual thing. It is a all-around samsara thing. Everybody in samsara is angry. Everybody in samsara is full of desire. Everybody in samsara is a loser. Everybody in the samsara is depressed and unhappy. And which emotion is stronger depending on the situation and your rebirth? Maybe in this rebirth, all right, maybe this person here is very angry, but in their next rebirth they become very patient, but they become very depressed. Maybe in this rebirth, this person is very depressed, not much anger. It reverses. Do you know why? all of us, according to Buddha, has the causes to be bitter, unhappy, angry, depressed. Proof, we're still here. So the problem that we are individualizing is not an individual problem. It's not a problem with our father, that he thinks different, therefore we need to control. It's not a problem with my brother, my sister, my wife, my husband. It's not a problem with that individual person. It is a problem that is inherent in all of existence. If it's a problem that's inherent in all of existence, why are you individualizing it? Why? If you individualize an inherent problem of the environment, if you individualize the inherent problem of a whole environment, nobody can get along with you. You will never be free. You will never become a happy old lady, a happy old man, full of wisdom and love and inspire people. It'll only be words. And in between your words that we should do it this way, we should be this way, we should act this way, it should be this way, anger, impatience, giving up, black face will manifest. Haven't we all gone through that? I have. And do you know where that comes from? That comes from individualizing the problem. The problem that we all are making, the problem that's making us feel this way is not that person. It's all of existence. It's everybody in samsara. It's everybody who's not enlightened. It's everybody who is having no control and taking rebirth over and over and over. It's all of us. If it's all of us, do we get angry at everyone? Ignore them? Go away from them? Sorry. Or we exercise patience. All of us, in order to accomplish a goal, all of us, in order to accomplish one or two goals in the past, have we not said, all right, I'm going to forgive this person. All right, I'm going to pretend I didn't see this. Okay, you know what? I'm not going to freak out with this person today. Haven't you just ignored something that bothered you no end? Yes, right? So if you've ignored certain situations that bothered you no end, you've ignored certain people that bothered you to death, right? They really bother you. The minute you see them, you're depressed, you're angry, you're impatient, and you want to kick them. And then you do Vajrasana and come back and be a good Buddhist again. Okay. Oh, we've all seen people like that really, oh, yo. You just look at them. And you want to take a kata and strangle them with it. And just before they black out, you release it. Oh, sorry. Because if they die, it's very bad karma. If they don't die, it's bad karma, but not very bad, you know. Haven't there people that you just want to take that kata and strangle them with that kata? You just visualize how long the kata is, silky and white and flowing, wrinkle-free with the 8 auspicious signs. Hi, dear. And then you take that kata and you wrap it around their neck slowly with some music on while you're having a cup of nice tea. And then you enjoy it. And then you finally say to them all the things that bother you, and you go, nyah! And then they're like this. And then just before their eyeballs turn completely white, you let it go, sorry. All of us have people like that. But you know what? We can't do things like that. You know why? If we're going to have to strangle everybody with the kata because they get on our nerves, right? I'm going to need a lot of katas in here. If I can sell katas to people who need a kata for getting rid of people to get on their nerves, I'll be rich. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Just Dato alone, I'll be rich. She'd be like, can I have a truckload? I'll be sure, here. Just imagine. How about people who work in public places, big companies, big whatever, and there's all these kind of workers who walk in like that? And they do their work like that. And they make all these mistakes and they go home. And on the way out, you're just there with a kata. You know what I mean? If we're going to strangle every single person that has gotten on our nerves since we were born till now, the kata seller would be rich. That's not the answer, is it? No. You can't go, oh, you got on my nerves, wife. And then the little kid, and then your father, your mother, and then pretty much later you go, everybody's gone. The sound effect is a kata squeezing tighter. Just in case you're wondering where that sound comes from. Some people think I'm a judo master. I have the physique of one, I know. 20 years ago. Okay, now. Hello. Who's looking at me? Wherever you are in the planet, this is Justin TV Live. It's Tamron Machine. Hi. Okay. They're looking at me from all around the world. I don't know. Hula. Some wives wake up their husband. Hey, he's on. Wait, wake up. Sound like I go to sleep. He's on. Okay, now. We can't individualize the person. If we individualize the person, we will never, ever be happy. Never. Stop blaming the person. Stop blaming the situation. Stop blaming whoever you're blaming. Got that, anyone? How? Keep saying to yourself. It's not the person, it's the place. It's the environment. It's the whole situation, and I'm stuck in it. Look, I'll give you a little example. I love India, and I always love India. And I didn't want to leave India when I was living there. I really love it. I miss it a lot. But I don't like India when you're sick. Because when you go to the doctors, they give you prescriptions. You go and get your own medication from the pharmacist. And you know what? Most of the time, the pharmacist is not there. And even if there is not much help. His son's there. His daughter's there. His neighbor's there. The washerwoman's there. And they get the medicine for you. And do you know, out of 10 prescriptions, 4 to 5 is completely wrong. Not even close. Do you know how I know? Because I speak English. So when some of the high lamas and old monks, especially the old monks are very sick, I personally take them to the hospital in Hubli, 1 hour away. And I put them there, and I take care of them. Sometimes I stay in the hospital for 20 days because I'm taking care of 3 to 4 monks simultaneously. Some need surgery. And I personally go and get the medicines and bring it back. And every single day, I break up the dosage and give it to them. So when I buy the medicines, I check. Many times, I scream my head off at their son. Literally, their son's this big, and they're giving you medicine. They're selling it. And I realize how many thousands of monks, villagers, Indian women, Indian men who get the wrong medicine. And it's even worse. It's not a joke. It's not a one-time off. It's every time I go and buy medicine, they give it to you wrong. Every time. Okay? And especially injections. You must check the bottle, the ampoule. Lucky I can read and speak English very well because everything's English. I check. Do you know how many times they give you the wrong ampoule? Not the amount, not the volume. Completely different. Many times. Do you know how many people have become sicker after they get medication? That's how it is. Okay? So, I got very angry. It can kill people. And I freaked out. And then I said to myself, okay, that's one aspect of India I don't like. And it's not just this seller. It's the whole place. Everywhere. Every place. Okay? My point, I let go. I can't scream at every prescription medical shop chemist in South India, which I did. I can't. I really cannot. So I let go. And I said to myself, whatever I can avoid, I will avoid. Whatever I can protect, whoever I can protect, I will. Those who cannot, what can I do? And I was very worried. But I let go of my anger because I didn't individualize that store. I know that it was a pervasive thing all over India. That's just the quality there in that case, sorry to say. And so I was just more careful. My point, if all of you say, hey, my ex-wife is a monster, my wife is a monster, all wives are like that, women are like that, it never ends. Because we know women that are beautiful. and that are inspiration and that changed our lives. We know women like that. Oh, you know what? My husband, he's fat, he's short, he's bald, he's scary, he's ugly, he's sneaky, and even if he wants to cheat, nobody would want him. Men are like that. All men are like that. Well, if all men are like that, you're like that too because you were a man in your previous life, so everybody's like that. It never ends. It just never ends. So if you want to individualize it, you got to stop. The secret? Meditate. All of us are in samsara together because we have tremendous anger, because we have collected tremendous negative karma, because we have hurt so many people, remembered and not remembered, because we abide in selfishness. And so all these actions we do, they culminate into a force, an energy called karma. And the karma will open and come back to us. And when we experience that karma, we attract these type of people. We attract them. What we need to do is forgive them. So high lamas or gurus or teachers or meditation masters, you know what they do? They recognize the faults of their students. But the distinguishing factor between them and you is they never give up on them. So this person may be a lazy bum, may be sneaky, may even stolen or ran away or had wrong views or spread gossip, but the teacher never gives up on them. The teacher will keep their pictures, keep it on the altar, pray for them. The teacher will take their pictures to holy places, give the names to high lamas and holy places, put their names there and pray for them. The teachers will wait and hope one day they come back and learn the Dharma. I've seen my teachers do that. The teachers will again and again give them gifts, scold them, tell them off, throw BFs, and then give them gifts again, and then tell them nicely, and then throw BFs and throw them out, and they kick them out and tell the whole world they're horrible, and then turn around and love them and kiss them again. Is a teacher a psycho, a schizophrenic? Some teachers might be, thank you very much. Some teachers might be. I don't know, maybe I'm schizo. I don't know, maybe it's an undiscovered territory there. Maybe I'm not. My point, teachers and practitioners and people who are true spiritualists, whether you're Christian or Buddhist or Jew, it doesn't matter. A true spiritual person, let's just say Buddhist for now for convenience sake, never give up on that person. Even if you're pissed off from here to high heaven today on that person, you don't give up. The minute you throw your BF and you scream, you're already plotting how to help them the next time. I promise you, there are people like that. There are people who think like that. So the difference between your BF, your anger, your disillusionment, what's the difference? Is you give up and you stay away. Real practitioners do not give up. Do you know why they don't give up? Because they don't individualize the problem to the person. Does everybody understand that? Jiffy four. Put four. Just like that, yes. Don't suffer. Put straight. Yeah, much better, isn't it? Don't put your mala on for you, you're going to go to hell. Just kidding. After all that niceness, oh my God, mala. Just sit, relax, okay? I know you're not a Tibetan Rinpoche. You can't sit like that. Even I can't sit like that, so I'm walking around. Rinpoche's here. Namo Mutofo. No, just kidding. His grandmother passed away. He went to the funeral today. So he's back. So he's cremated his grandmother today, which he loves so much, and put her in the temple already, her ashes. Okay, now, you sit comfortable. If you individualize it, you will never achieve any spiritual results. Never. If you individualize it, your spiritual, physical achievements like temples and centers and retreat huts will grow, but won't last after you're gone because it will take you to manage it. See, it's not your attainments managing it. It's not your love managing it. It's not your love to the next generation managing it. It's you managing it with a tight fist. That's why it's very important for us as spiritual people to spread love and compassion and forgiveness and care to nurture these people to reach a higher level so that even if you're not around, whatever you have built will continue. Otherwise, that's the Dharma. That is the Dharma. So the difference between us and real practitioners is they don't ever give up on the people, no matter how upset they are with them. You know why? Because giving up is selfish. And not giving up is a sign that you are letting go of selfishness. If you're letting go of selfishness, people will respect you. You will respect yourself. You become happier. You become better. Whatever you teach will grow. Whatever you write, people will read. Whatever you talk, people will watch, because they can feel your spirituality. And that's what we need to do. So we need to stop making sweeping statements. We need to stop making sweeping statements. I'm depressed. I'm upset. I'm angry. Spiritual masters do get depressed, get angry. I get upset. I get angry. I get depressed. But you know, whether I'm angry or depressed, I can't stop what I'm doing, because I've trained myself a little better than normal people. Normal people means what? Lay people. Okay? I've trained myself a little better, not so much better. I don't individualize it. I just get upset with the person at the moment, and then I look at the bigger picture. That's why spiritual teachers don't give up. Spiritual practitioners don't give up on anyone. Now, the recipient of that person shouldn't be like, oh, they'll never give up on me, so I'll just go play with myself and do this and do that and do this and do that, and I'll just run and I won't do this and I won't do that till I'm ready. But that's silly. You know why? Your teacher's love may never give up on you and always looking for you, but will you have the karma to connect? Because once you go too far, that's all. If the pot is upside down, what sunshine can get in? You know. So don't use that in a twisted way. Hence, doing retreats together is very beautiful. You know, when you are assigned a Dharma position, a committee member, a volunteer, whatever, or you're working in a department, do you know you have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful opportunity to get to know so many people and to understand their pain and their suffering, which is not so different than yours, and to stop focusing on yourself. And then when you understand them better, when you actually get together for a retreat, when you walk in and say, oh, that person has that problem. This one has that problem. Oh, that one has like that. Oh, that one's even worse than mine. Ayo, I wonder if his mother's okay. Ayo, his grandmother just passed away. Ayo. So your problem becomes less and smaller for the moment. And then when you do retreats, etc., you're not sitting there saying to etc., me. May my problems be solved. Also, may his problem, may their problem, may her problem, may this group's problem, may their family's problem. You know what happens when you do group retreat? Let me explain. Your mind opens up. That's why I said earlier, my conversation for lay people and beginners, it's very good to do group things like you're doing now. That's why we need a big gompa. Why? It teaches you to appreciate, even don't take your own case individualistically. Do you know why? Because they've got people with bigger problems than you. And that's the beauty of doing retreats together. So when we're in the position of doing a Dharma center and we're volunteering, you never quit and run. If you quit and run, if you don't do your job well, you know what it's signifying to yourself? That you're making your passions and you individualistic. No one in samsara has a bigger problem than you, more attached to you. You're the most attached one. The whole world has to forgive you because you're the most attached one. That's not right. You're not the most attached one. There are people more attached than you. But you're using that as an excuse not to do your duty. So hence, if you have a duty in a spiritual center, you should do it all the way without being pushed, without being coerced, without being reminded, without being scolded, without asking for sympathy from hundreds of people. Oh, but I want to do. What should I do? Oh, my God. That's when people say that to me, I almost lose my individuality on that person. Almost. Oh, no. I actually almost lose my, I become individual. That's what I'm trying to say with that person. Like, this person again. And you know what I think? Kata. Okay, good. In the future, that's our little key word. Any place you guys go around, when you're upset, you just think kata. Then your mother, your brother, they're like, kata wada, Samoa. Then he said, never mind, it's a private joke between me and 500 of us. So whenever you're upset, you think, kata. Or you think, let's not make it individual. Because if you keep thinking kata, you want to strangle them, you know what happens? You strangle yourself. Because you become more depressed, unhappy, you become more angry, you become bitter, and you go away. And you give. Because the kata you put on other people becomes your own kata, and it gets tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter. And that's what I'd like to share with everybody. That's the beauty of our center. That's the beauty of my style. You see, when you guys do your prayers, pray, pray, la, holy, shmoly, whatever, I'm at home drinking a Coke. But I'm here to give you a Dharma talk. And this Dharma talk will penetrate your minds because I'm telling you the truth, and I'm telling you that something that pervades everyone. It's not just one person or two persons, it's everyone. And if you really do, as I have shared with you, if you really do it, I guarantee you, you'll feel some release. And you'll become better and better and better. I guarantee you. Because Buddha's teachings are designed to make harmony and happiness. They're not designed to create more strife. Now, so when you're given an assignment in a Dharma center, you never give up. You never ever give up. You do all the way. Do you know why? Not because if you bring this amount of people in Dharma, you get to heaven. If you don't, you know, somebody over there, Saint Vajragini, saying, how many people you brought in? And you're like, four. Back to the shit farm for you. Excuse the lingo. No, it's not like that. It's not about how many people you bring in and you go to heaven. It's not about if you don't bring them in or you share with other people, you go to hell, or God's not going to protect you, or Buddha's going to hurt you. If Buddha's going to hurt you because you're nice to other people in other religions and you share food and you're close to them, if Buddha's going to hurt you because of that, hello, he's not a Buddha. You know why? I'm like that. I've got anger. I'm jealous. I'm prejudiced. You know, I like this. I'm racist. I'm all those things. If God's like that, why am I praying to myself? Why am I praying to myself? I don't need to pray to myself. I can bless myself. Slap, let's be more angry. I can do a lot of ugly things myself. I can punish people. You know, I don't need to, you know, have lightning strike someone's house. I can go there and put petrol and light it. Da-da-da, the end. And you know, if worst comes to worst, kata. I don't need a God or a Buddha that scares me and punishes me and threatens me and tells me that I can only be nice to people that are in my religion, my denomination, and then my church. This church, that's it. Everybody else is going to hell. Oh, please. Please, I've got enough suffering. I need a lot of previous life regression, hypnotherapy. I need a lot of physiotherapy. I need a lot of help. Don't add that to me and then tell me God and Buddha's like that. Please. I don't need that. I've got enough stress in my life. I want a Buddha and a God that's nice, that loves me for me, that will be my friend, that I can be nice to any religion and marry anybody and eat food with anybody. And you know, if he's Jewish, I go to his wedding, I put on the little yarmulke, and I also, you know, show respect to Torah, and I won't go to hell. I like a God that's like that, because that's how God should be in my projection. Because if he's not, like I said, why should I pray to myself? I don't need to pray to myself. I'm evil and prejudiced already. I've got enough anger. Look at me. I don't need that. I need a God that's my friend. Yes, I need a friend. Not a friend, a friend. That's a little child in me coming out again. Friend. Okay, now. So, if you don't make it individualistic, you will change. You know what happens? Your relationship with everybody around you, especially the immediate people, gets better. If you go to a Dharma center, you have a guru, and you go to a church, you have a pastor. You know, if you have all that, you know what's the first sign of it? You get along with people that you don't get along with usually. That's the first sign. Otherwise, what's all the mantras you're reciting? What's all the Bible reading you're doing? What's all the pray, you know? What's all that? Why do all that and you can't even get along with the people you don't get along with? The first sign that you're becoming spiritual, whatever religion you are, the first sign that you've accepted your guru, you have guru devotion, is you get along with people you don't get along with and you stop controlling them. That's the first sign. And if you don't do that, whatever you do will not be successful. Why? Look at your track record until now. Prove yourself right. It's like that. So therefore, when we're together doing a retreat like this, when we do Dharma work, when we volunteer, we feel good. We're smile. We're on our best behavior. It might be fake, but you see, when you do it enough times, it becomes real. That's what meditation's about. Let me repeat. When you do it enough times, it becomes real. Do you know why? It's called familiarity or habituation. So therefore, when you guys do a setup puja together, you do a setup retreat together, it's so beautiful. When you guys are on a committee, or you're doing this Dharma or that Dharma, or you're working in this department, that department, it's so beautiful. Do you know why? You get something you don't get anywhere else. That that the more you do this, the happier you will become. No matter how difficult it is in the beginning. Do you know why? Because you're working from the truth. What is that? Not judging people. You can judge, but don't judge people. Judge everyone. Does everybody understand how that makes sense? That's it. That is it. I don't want to talk too long because I already talked to you earlier. I just want to highlight this. Never give up on anyone. Never just simply throw them out. If you need to throw them out for 1 year, 2 year, 5 year, 10 year, throw them out for 1, 2 year. But your mind should think, no, I'm going to get them back later. I'm going to wait for the time. Never give up on anyone. Never generalize from one person everything, and then you give up. Never. If you admire your teachers, if you admire your masters, if you admire Dharma, if you admire, that's the principal key in Dharma, it's never giving up. It's called Tsundru in one of the six paramitas. Tsundru, not giving up. If you want to come out from your depression, that's what you need to do. And you know what? If you want KWPC to come up, then the very people doing it, that's us, must work for KWPC from that basis. Then KWPC will last after we're dead. And then after we spend, you know, $350 billion from it, on it, it won't be wasted. Why work so hard, build KWPC, and then when we're dead and it's gone? Why? Look, I've got other ways to spend my life. I've got better ways to spend my life. It's not going to last. I'm not going to build an institution that lasts 10, 20 years. How long am I going to be alive? And then you say, oh, but Rinpoche, you'll get praise. You'll be honored. They'll scatter flowers on you. Save it. I don't need no flowers scattered. I get flowers every day. I get more flowers than any girl in this room. You don't even remember the last time you got flowers, do you? Never mind. You're cute anyway. Because when I said that, she's like, flowers. May 1961, one stop. Yeah. That's what happens if you become a housewife. They're like, whatever. But when you're a Rinpoche, you're timeless. You get flowers every day, bouquets. And if you don't get flowers every day so you don't lose face, you buy it yourself, put it there. When people walk in, wow, Rinpoche, you got flowers? Yes. There have been times that I had to buy my own flowers and put it there and let people assume it was offered to me. There were times. Thanks for the Japanese food, by the way. I love it. Thank you very much. Thank you for the lamp. I mean, the candle. I'm not burning it immediately, because each one is about $600, one wick. So I dare not. I'm going to wait for a special occasion, do a dedication for you, and offer it. I'm not going to simply do it. So, hey, welcome back, Eric. I didn't see you. Had a good trip in Cambodia? He's running a little kid center there. Can I have a Coke? Product placement time. I'm almost done, everybody. Call me. I will endorse your product. Call me. Why? Because no one else called me. I'm dying for Coke to call me. Can you imagine? Can you see me? One day you're going down to the, you know, the airport and you see me on the billboard with Coke. Think different. I'm dying to get on a billboard. I want to get on a billboard. I do. I've been wanting to get on a billboard. Last time when I was a model and, you know, 360 kgs lighter, I wanted to be on a billboard. There's a NOLA. No billboards, no sponsors, nobody can put it on. I want to be on a billboard. I want a billboard, billboard. If it benefits the organization, why not? If it doesn't, why put myself on the billboard? You know why? I'll need two. Look at me. Now, I want somebody in KL for me to endorse their product. You know, like Red Bull? Or maybe not. No, maybe not. The wrong message. Red Bull? No. I don't think I'll do that. That's a little wrong message. I did a commercial for Lo Hanga. Is it? Lo Hanga. You know that Hong Kong product? Some Hong Kong actress came. I forgot her name. She was pretty and skinny and fair, nice hair and straight and all that stuff. Took us 8 hours to shoot 5 minutes. Oh, my God. We had to shoot that behind the beach club. Anyway, I was there, and I had to be one of the bad guys who attacked her. And then they have someone come in, and they deflect. I was in a commercial, right. But, of course, I wasn't teaching that time. I was on a sabbatical. And I had to go for combat training. We went for 3 days to learn how to fall. Because I was the one going to... Yeah, I had to fall. Now if I fall, you can forget it. Now if I fall, you have to call the ambulance and there'll be a hole on the floor, indentation. Yeah, last time I had to fall, they put a cushion, so they trade us. They say, when you go like that, you fall. So I fell. There was two or three of us. And then we did it with this actress, the commercial lap. And we got paid, and we got free rotten food in the evening. I don't know, they give you something to styrofoam, you look at it. I stayed skinny easily. The food you get from commercials to modeling, they give you no offense, you stay very skinny. Because one smell, you can see I got out of modeling. When I had the Ladrang people bring up food to me, they bring up three trays. To your supreme eminence, your holiness, the Buddha, the heart sun, please enjoy your meal. And I take out my golden chopstick and I taste it. Not take it, I just eat it like that. Who's going to eat with a little chopstick? I'll be there all day. I just use my hands. I'm Tibetan, what? Yeah. And I love taking friends to eat once in a blue moon. One of my favorite places, excuse me, is Marché's. You know why? Give me one of everything with no meat. All right. So, doing retreats together, doing Dharma work together, doing volunteer work, and being steady in the department is very beneficial. Do you know why? Because you start to stop focusing on yourself. And you learn to focus on other people. And you learn to pray for other people and not just yourself. Sure, you don't become a saint overnight, but you could become better. Remember my Dharma talk tonight, which is on not individualizing a person so that you don't become angrier, more depressed, more bitter, and you run. Don't. What's the other choice? Individualize it. You use your intelligent, educated minds and think about what I said tonight. I didn't come here to tell you to pray, give you some special mantra, give you initiation. I gave you the Dharma. And I want everybody to think about what I explained today. I explained it from my heart with a lot of love and a lot of care and a lot of sincerity. Do you know why I came? Let me tell you why. Because I felt what I said on the phone didn't go in deep enough and I didn't want this opportunity to go by. All of you made an effort to come, so I need to give you some Dharma. That's the best gift we can give people is Dharma. That's the best gift a Sangha can give anyone's Dharma. I mean, you guys support me so well. You know, every day I bring my black bowl and I go to one of your houses to get my food. You know, monks, they have a black bowl and they come to your house and then you put food in it. Well, I went to all your houses in one day. I know. I've been hiding the black bowls under my bed and eating when nobody's watching. Seriously speaking, that's the best thing a monk can give you is Dharma. And that's what I did. I will take two questions. Anyone? Related to what I said, not, oh, Rinpoche, I bought a setup. Can I put it next to Kuan Yin? Now! Why not? Because your question's dumb. Oops. I've individualized it, see? Any questions related to what I said? Raise your hand. Oh, this is Malaysia. Everybody does raise their hand. And when I go home, there's 56 emails. I'm sorry I didn't ask you in class. Can I ask you this? And I write back, no. I get that all the time, you know? I was afraid to ask. Nice statue. I blocked it. Nice. Good job. Can you do more for me? Yeah, you can do more. I'm going to make you do more. I'm going to do one. I want you to do one of my previous life. Very nice. I'll show you, huh? No. You rest for a while because I know your fingers are numb. Yeah, she did an Amitabha statue for me. She's never done a statue ever. So she just got it together and she just made it. And it took her about 2-3 months. Very talented. Very, very talented. Of course, I'm more talented, but anyway, I let her have the limelight today. I can make statues too. I really can. I can't in my dreams. Okay, now. Become happier people, everybody. By not individualizing and stop blaming. You become more and more angry if you keep saying, why are you like that? Why are you like this? Why is it like that? Why do you do this? Why? Become like a chanting. Why? When you walk in, you're like, why? Stop. You won't be happier. Oh, I'm so sorry. I forgot it's not a table. It's a relic. You gotta stop. All right? I'm not going to the center anymore because he upset me. She upset me. Oh, come, get over it. You don't want to be a Buddha because of one person? Wake up. One person, you don't want to be a Buddha. Ay-yo.
Oh, if I go there, they're going to give me a Dharma job, and I don't want to do it, but I want to save the world. I want to benefit everyone. I want to help everyone. I want to really do something. Give me. All right, can you type this out? No, I'm busy. Can you clean that up? No, I've got a numb hand. Can you, like, go over here and set up the cushions? But I don't get off of work till 12 midnight. So whatever work they give you, it's always no, 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 no. Everything is no. So what work can they give you? Can you go home, wash your hair, eat, and, you know, have bubbly, and go out and party? Yeah, I can do that. That's a great instruction. Come on. Whatever work people give you, whatever assignment your guru or your Dharma brothers and sisters give you, cannot this, cannot that, cannot this, cannot that, and you're still going, can I have Dharma work? Because I'm really sincere. And you know, kata! Don't you know people like that? You give them so many assignments, they quit, they run. You give them an assignment, the minute you're turning around, they're like, you're like, hey, you didn't finish. You're like, oh, but. Don't you know people like that? And then they come back and they go, oh, but I really want to benefit Dharma. I really love Dharma. I really want to collect merit. Can you give me some job? And you're like, let me give you a job. Don't ask for any jobs. Stay home. And if you're really desperate, you tell them, please do some mantras, etc. Oh, I can do that. Can I do it at home? Yes. Can I do that watching TV? Yes. Can I do that in the toilet? Yes. You can do it anywhere you want. How many? 10 billion? Come and see me when you finish. 10 billion set up mantras. They're like, oh. Well, what else can you give them? They can't do anything. Isn't it people like that? They want to save the world, but they can't do anything. Uh-oh, Rinpoche's going to give a Dharma talk. It's going to be past 11 o'clock. I got to go to sleep. I got to go sleep. I got to wake up early so that I don't look old and tired and fat and bored, but you already look like that. Oh. I know, low blow. For the Dharma, anything can. Why? Because when you do Dharma, anything can. You benefit so many people. For others, any burden I can accept, I will take it. For others, I will accept it. Isn't that what made Jesus, you know, totally famous? They know not what they do. Forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Well, you don't want to, like, go to bed thinking they know what they're doing. I hate them. Kata. No, you got to think good. You got to think real good. For the sake of others, for the sake of your spiritual enlightenment, for the sake of your Dharma practice, get involved and do Dharma work. And be steady and be sincere and do it well. Be kind to everybody. You know, come before puja, help set up. And go after puja, and after puja, help set up. You know, don't be like before, you know, right at puja, you show up like da-da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da, and then you're like, oh, holy schmoly. Oh, my, yeah, just so hot. Oh, my, yeah, just so. Oh, my, just so. And then when they're finished, you throw this in the air, you're out that door. Come on. Oops, not you, la. Not you. You don't look like me at all. Now, very simple. Do whatever you can, not do what you feel you can do. Okay. Kuma, namaste. Welcome back. Durga, welcome back. So, oh, Mitra. Hello, Anita. How are you? Namaste. I haven't met her since she came back from Nepal. So, do whatever you can. Remember, please remember my last words. If you want to be depressed, and you want to be unhappy, and you want to eventually become bitter and very angersome, and you see examples that around you, if you want that, always do things for yourself, whatever justification you want to put on it. Always do things for yourself. If you want to be admired, loved, be beneficial, use your life in a wonderful way. You've changed people's lives, you change your own life, and you really feel happy, maybe not in the conventional way. You know what? Happiness doesn't come from conventional ways. You can be happy alone. You can be happy with a partner or without a partner. You can be happy rich or not rich. You can be happy with long hair or short hair. You can be happy any way you want as long as your attitude is correct. Don't think happiness only comes from conventional methods of what you've been brought up to believe. It's not true. It's not true. If it was true, you'd be always happy. Always. Second thing is, if you are in a spiritual practice,
if you consider yourself spiritual or you're involved. Okay, if I dare say some of you think you're my students or whatever, or you want to be, or want to take refuge, whatever. You know, all that's wonderful. Those are ceremonies and that's beautiful. You want to, you don't want to. It doesn't do a thing for me. Look, 5,000 of you take refuge. 5 of you take refuge. 1 of you take refuge. If I'm going to go to heaven, I'm going to go to heaven. If I'm not, I'm not. I'm not. It's the end. It has nothing to do with you. It has to do with me. So, the first sign that you're absorbing what I'm saying is you get along with people you don't get along with. And you make an effort. You make an effort with the people you've been hurting, damaging, controlling, bullying, pushing, abusing. You stop it. Yeah, you stop it. There's the second thing you should do is take up a Dharma work and go all the way. Do you know why? The best remedy for depression, unhappiness, anger is charity work. That's the best. And we are a charitable organization. KSK gives 800 packets of food a week. 700 goes to me. I eat it. Just kidding. I don't eat that food. I'm on a diet. Can't you tell? I started 1 hour ago. Me and Paris are always on a diet. Whenever me and Paris hang out together, we look at the cakes, the buffet, the noodles, the pasta, and we tell each other we're on a diet. Then we tell each other in the next breath, tomorrow. Any questions? Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Your question? Okay, what she's saying, sometimes you come across extenuating factors, right? Where you, no choice, they're just monsters. Okay, listen to me. But if that is a cover to give up more and more and more, and then you have a trail of people you've given up on, you become antisocial and bitter, then it's an excuse. But if you're successful and you're making it and you get along, you're all right, you're spreading happiness, it's all right, what? You have to check yourself. That one I can't tell any of you, that's individual. Oh, yeah, I was saying it's not, okay, in that case it's individual. Don't you laugh at me. You want me to give you a wig? No. Momo cute. Momo's my granny. A great granny. Okay. I like her. She's very sweet. Very smart. If you see the way she writes and all that stuff, very, very smart. I dare not debate with her. I dare not. I didn't recognize you with your Eric glasses on. Eric Chung wears that. Does that have a prescription? Yeah, his. It doesn't. His doesn't. Okay. What you smiling at? You're not allowed to be happy. This is Dharma. Momo, cute. I can't kiss you because you're young and pretty. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't mean that. She made me say it. Don't individualize it. You're matronly and motherly, so I can give you a kiss and no one will say something's going on, something's sick. You're matronly and motherly. This one, young and pretty, cannot. This one, I kiss people and say, aha! Cannot. You can la. No, just kidding. No, she's looking at me like this. Yo. So scary. Just kidding. Madeline, honey, is very beautiful, very pretty, very young, and she'll always be like that in my heart. She's a wonderful lady. I love having her in the center. She always contributes. No problems, ever. Always good. Once in a while, she comes up with some weird, controversial questions, but never mind. We'll send Su Ming to talk to her. It's her auntie Wa. Yes. Nice pants. Did you take those from me? Eric Chung, you've been giving my pants to her. That's the same style as me. That's it. I thought my pants was individual. All right. Okay. That's up to you. If you have a history, I give up, I don't like it, you're a loser, you're never successful, you always make excuses, obviously you're wrong, right? You have to check individually. One more question?
You take everything not individually, and you're working with a bunch of people and things that's not moving. How do you accept that? Because
oh, no, you don't. You make them move. You do whatever you can, but you don't do it out of anger to hurt them or to put them down or to damage them. You make them move because if it moves, it benefits them, right? Of course you can. You can push. You know, being spiritual doesn't mean you're inert. Being spiritual doesn't mean you just sit there and go, oh, you mean tomorrow's special Sunday edition didn't come out? Never mind, Lord. Next week can, Lord. Tomorrow, no newspaper, because I'm a Buddhist. Of course not. And then, you know, you're advertising for Sony, and the whole sentence is wrong. They have a roadshow, and you put it for, their roadshow is like September 2010, September 20, 2010, September 20, 2020. You're like, oh, never mind, I'm Buddhist. Rinpoche told me, don't be individuals, forgive. No, you sound straight now, dumbbell. My point is this, is what I gave you is a general formula that you need to mold into your own individual style and work. There is not one style for everyone. Do you know why? There's not one situation for everyone. I'm not being generous. I'm just being honest. Your job and my job would be different. This lady's job and this lady's job will be different. So you take that as a generality. Example, I can give you a tomato. You can make tomato sauce for spaghetti or you can make salad. But I give you the tomato. So you don't come and say to me, oh, I don't want tomato. Can I use cucumber? No. Use the tomato lot, but how you want to use it, up to you. So if you need to get something accomplished, you need to be a little pushy, you need to be whatever. Maybe if you push them too much, when it's done, give them a little gift. I mean, don't just leave it like that. And it takes time. Don't expect overnight results, because why? Attila the Hun, oh, not you, of course. Attila the Hun doesn't change overnight. You get what I mean? Does that help you? Individualize it in this case. Not individualizing it is not blaming one person. It's a nature of existence. That's why we're still here. The nature of samsara. Okay? Good. That's it, kids. Rinpoche is going to go now. It was wonderful seeing all of you. You already got the oral transmission. I don't need to give you another one. I'm happy you're doing the retreat. Do it well. And remember, the thing that makes you closer to a yidam, or especially a protector, is not how many mantras you do. It's not how well you do the black tea. It's not how much you offer. It's how less your selfishness is. If your selfishness is less, Setrap will be very pleased. You know why? He's a Dharma protector, not a monster protector. If Setrap was a monster protector, if you become more meaner, more ugly, more selfish, Setrap will help you more what? That's why when you become meaner and uglier and more selfish, Setrap cannot help you, because he's not a monster protector. Okay? He protects spiritual beings to become more spiritual. So hence, if you're a monster, does that mean he won't help you? He'll help you once in a blue moon. He won't overdo it so you become a bigger monster. Why? Because he has compassion. All right, I'm sure there are no monsters in this room. It's my perception, of course. And my perception can be wrong. Now, so therefore, but what's very important is this, is the more you do Dharma practice and study and help and volunteer, all the Dharma work and Dharma help and Dharma departments are meant to lessen your selfishness. When you say you don't have time to do Dharma work, it's a very clear indication you're very selfish. That's why it's called Dharma work. So if you're selfish, I'm not blaming you or putting you down or saying you're bad. You reap the karma of being selfish. The karma comes to you. You know, no offense. All right? So therefore, when you want to do these pujas, if you want them very effective, the more selfless you are, the more effective you are. That's why very high practitioners, they just tell the protector to do this, 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 without rituals, the protector will do it upon their word. You know why? Because whatever they ask the protector to do is not for themselves. The protector will be closer and more loving and caring for you if you are more giving to other people. If you always think about yourself, 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 how do you expect the protector to help you? His job is not to help you become more selfish. Having said that, you can have relationships. You can eat good food. You can dress. You can have apartments. You can have a job. You can have all of that. It's all right. But remember, priority should be work that benefits others, not work that benefits yourself. Then your life will be more balanced and happy. All right? Happy Dalai Lama's birthday. Happy Setrap Day. Happy Retreat Day. I'm very happy to see all of you. Nice to see all of you. And remember, everything that I've said, we'll put it online. Please listen to it again, not because I have a fabulous voice, but because what I'm saying, if you remind yourself, there'll be a difference in your life. If there's a difference in your life, then the whole purpose of me being here the 30 years I've given my life to Dharma, creating the center, would have been fulfilled. I've given everything I have to Dharma, my youth, my time, my years. I've given over 30 years of my life to the Dharma, and I will give the next 30 years till I'm dead. That's a promise. So if you respect me, if you like me, if you're listening to me, if you think I'm something great, it's not because I am, it's because of what I'm doing. So if I do more of this, more people think I'm great and respect me, right? But that's not just for me, that's for all of you. If we do work for others, everybody will love you and respect you, no matter what you look like, how you are, rich or poor, it doesn't matter anymore. The purpose is to bring happiness to others and yourself through work that is selfless. And you can't do selfless work overnight, but start and make it consistent until it becomes a habituation. Get along with everybody. Get along with people traditionally you have not got along with. Don't control people. Don't tell them what to do. Don't force them. Don't hurt them. I'm not talking about if you're a supervisor. You know, if you're a supervisor, if you're the president of the United States, Obama, I say, don't control anybody. He'd be like, but I'm kind of like the president. Of course, not like that. Like, you know what I mean. Through selfishness, wanting things your way. When I say don't control people, it means through selfishness, wanting to hurt them, want to upstage them, want to press them down, want to suppress them. Not that. And then if you say, but I have a better idea, I'm smarter than them, maybe you are, but you know what? No one's going to listen to you because you hurt their feelings. So how smart you are, you're going to end up alone. What's the point of being smart if nobody likes you? What's the point of being smart when you walk in, everybody walks out? What's the point of being smart when you walk in, everybody keeps quiet? You think, oh, I'm the big boss, I kept quiet because of him. No, it's because they feel sorry for you. They're like, oh, poor thing. Hasn't matured yet. All right? So be kind to everybody around you. Really. Start with the people that you have hurt and damaged. And if they don't like you, you don't have to go and chase after them all day, but you do your best from your side. Don't give up, because whatever faults you see in a person, it's not the individual fault, it's the fault of everything we live in. That's why we have a Dharma center. That's why we're practicing Dharma. That's why you're not a Buddha. Hello? Everybody runs around, they think they're a Buddha. That's why, oh, I'm disappointed. A disappointed Buddha? A depressed Buddha? A Buddha that gave up? Look, Mr. Buddha, I give up. But you're a Buddha. I know, but I give up. What kind of Buddha is that? There's no Buddhas that give up. Doesn't that make a lot of sense? Hi, Mom. A lot of sense. That's what they're supposed to say on TV. Hi, Mom. Oh, I say hi, Rinpoche, my guru. That would be better. Remember that. Let go of your anger by letting go of how you perceive things should be and individualizing each situation. It's the nature of samsara for everything to go upside down. It's the nature of samsara that it has to die. It's the nature of samsara for it to go down. It is the nature of samsara to lose everything. It is the nature of samsara to become dirty, to rot, and it becomes nothing. That's the nature of samsara, and no one in this room can do anything about it. So accept it. So while you're here, do the best you can before it's too late. Daso jine sabi gewandi, tandan drawa kunan gamandan, jeva jeson lozan draba ichu. Tempe himbo rin de saje, chanjus in jurin boje, majin banan chigi, cheba neva meba yang, gonin gonin pewash. Tony Tawan in Boji, Majin Panan Chigichi, Cheba Neva Meba Yang, Gonin Gonu Posh. Gewandi, Nudda, Lama Sanje, Jugune, Joa Chigan Malupa, De Salako. Chiji Jabo Tungaba, Chiji Nava Peral, Kidin Jima Shimandan, Tinjin Malon Tawash, Dadan Jisin Dusundan, Jevetuni Latin, Jawa Losan Trabayi, Temba Yuniba, Juji. Gandhi, Derek, Kore, Shingandi, Pendem, Malu Jumene, Chinese, Wantens, and Gazo Yi, Shabizi, Padu, Tin, Juji. Good, very good. Dato, you'll be very busy, so I made one bottle just for you. So keep it by your bedside. You wake up, take a little, and then do your prayers. It's protection, purification, and blessing. Maybe some tough days ahead, a lot of meetings. So bless you. And then whenever anything, just think Setra. Okay. See you soon. Bye, Lynn. Nice to see you. Nice to see you in Puja. It's shocking, but nice. It's a good shock. Nice hair. Gimli's nice. Woman, nice girl. Nice to see you, Martin. Good night, everybody. Good night, everybody. Have a good evening. And do the retreats and come back. Do the retreats. Do it well. If you do the retreats well, as I said earlier, your own problems will disappear. Do you know why? When you pray for others and you do things for others, it's the best way to clear obstacles for yourself. Do you know why? Because the obstacles are created from selfishness. So if you reduce selfishness, the cause of the obstacles become purified, the obstacles go away. If you come and you keep praying only for yourself, you create even more obstacles. You say, how can I pray to Setra and create more obstacles? Setra doesn't give you the obstacle, your attitude gives you the obstacle. Does everybody understand? So therefore, when you pray for others, you benefit others, you work for others, you purify your karma for your own obstacles. That's why Dharma work is one of the best types of work for purifying obstacles. Even the monks in the monastery must go make bread or clean or wash for their teachers or the monastery to purify obstacles, to understand the Dharma, even in the monastery. So when you do Dharma work, good motivation, when you work as a Dharma community, you purify a lot of obstacles. You know why? Because you're lessening your selfish mind for others. The cause of lessening Dharma obstacles is doing work for others. So if you're doing work for others, you can nod vigorously. If you're not, you're just nodding to yourself in the air. So what you need to do is do Dharma work. How much? How little? Up to you. Stable. The key word is stable. And then you'll see things become better and better in your life. Your mind will become happier because it serves others. From that merit, things become better for yourself. Okay, good night, everybody. Good night. Good night. No, let's go. And 한국 기시다. Yeah, let's go, let's go, let's go. Close the door. Otherwise, I'll be here for 2-3 hours. All right, let's go. They can hear me. Oh, no, let's go. Let's go. 2 hours, let's go. Can you still hear me? Oh, no.